This is the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. I'm your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com, the Arizona Cardinals swipe from the USA Today NFL Wire. My co-host is Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, Arizona Cardinals site from SB Nation, and he is also one of the hosts of the original Draft Breakdown podcast. Seth, can you believe it? This is episode 329, and we have a 6-0 Cardinals team, something we have not seen, something that has not existed in our lifetime. Literally not in our lifetime.
No, we haven't. And I mean, it's crazy because no Arizona Cardinal fan has ever seen it, ever. You had to be a fan of St. Louis, right? Or was it Chicago? I don't even remember.
It was 1974, so that was still St. Louis. But I'm like, yeah. I'm old. I've got kids in college. I was born in 77, so I wasn't around for that. Seth's a lot younger. He's got a gazillion kids, but he's younger than I am. So he's a youngster total still. And I'm old. I don't even know what that's like. I remember 4-0 2012. 4-0 2012. Yeah. And that turned to poop so fast. Yeah.
Where we knew it was probably too good to be true.
But come on, this 6-0 team, and honestly, let's put this out there. When we said this before, like with the win over the Browns, and we're going to talk more about this, there's no one in the league who's better. You look at the national publications, power ranks, whatever. Like the resume that the Cardinals have is better than any resume that is out there in the NFL, because they beat the crap out of a Titans team that just beat the Buffalo Bills. They beat the crap out of a Rams team that beat the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. They beat the crap out of a Rams team. So these are three playoff teams from a year ago that they beat the poop out of. And they took care of business against Jacksonville. They had a scare against Minnesota, so they were lucky because there were things like they played a game that they could have lost, but still managed to win it. They made plays and they still could have lost that. But look, the games that they played, an incredibly physical game against the 49ers, and then they beat down three playoff teams. And I don't care what it is at this point. The way this team is built right now, the way they're playing, there is nobody better than they are. You could put, I like we were talking about for the show, there's a bunch of teams kind of right there on the same tier. The Cardinals are right there at the top of, if you're talking about literal Super Bowl contending teams. This is crazy to think, but this is really a Super Bowl contending team. And anything less than anything less than a nice run in the postseason is going to be disappointing, honestly.
Yeah, it would be. And it's one of those things that you look at and you've seen just how good this team can be and what they can compete or where and how that they can compete. And that makes you excited because you see a team that's able to win in different ways. You mentioned it. I mean, you had the blowouts against Tennessee, LA, and Cleveland, where they just dominated a game from start to finish. You had a shootout nail biter against, a good Minnesota team. Minnesota's a good team. They're fighting for a playoff spot. You had a brawl against the San Francisco 49ers who tried to make it that way and you found a way to win. And all of that plays into the idea that this team is better than we expected and, quite frankly, farther along than what we were expecting.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's the thing. So we thought it's impressive on both sides of the ball because One, we know offensively they're doing things that they've not done before. They've scored over 30 points in 5 of 6 games. But it's the defensive work that's been really been impressive because they have allowed 20 points or fewer in 5 of their 6 games. They are now number 2 in the NFL in points allowed. They have a number, I think it is number 2 defense against on third down. Let me double check that. No, number 3 in third downs. And number 2 on fourth down. And no one has faced more fourth downs as a defense than the Cardinals this season. It is absolutely impressive. They're one of the best offense in the league. They're proving to be one of the best defenses in the league, even though we know that there appear to be flaws on this defense. But the team defensive play, plus the fact that their offense is so good, makes their defense better. So it's not just, we look at teams we're talking about, Kansas City, their defense is a problem, and it's affecting their offense. The Cardinals' defense is good enough where, because their offense is so good, that defense can be great sometimes. And that, I think that sets them apart over a lot of these other very good teams in the league, because their defense is playing at such a high level.
Yeah, their defense is playing at a high level, and what you're finding is that this is a team that has, you know, an ability to kind of match up with their opponents in different ways. I know that the Browns were missing some key players in their top-rated rushing offense, but this is the third time that we've seen them really put together a good run defense against a team that knows how to run the ball well.
Well, then never mind the fact that the Cardinals were missing basically three of their 6 top frontline guys. You know, you lose Chandler right. Jones, you lose Corey Peters, you lose Zach Allen. I mean,
right. And so when you look at it, you know, the we were talking about it, joking about it. I tweeted about it as a joke. I mean, every week what the Cardinals did in week 1 against Derrick Henry becomes more and more impressive when he's putting up 130 yards rushing per game.
That's after a 58-yard performance in week 1.
That includes a 58-yard performance against the Cardinals. Like, think about that. Like, the Cardinals were so good that even though that Derrick Henry is still averaging 130 yards per game, it's insane. And so, yeah, I mean, when you just look at it from that perspective, you see that this team has the ability to play that down and dirty. They can get in the trenches and really fight and win that, you know, battle. And like we said, we know what their offense can do and how dominant it can be. And that's kind of what we've expected, and they've done it pretty much every week except the one against the 49ers, where, I mean,
and even then, like, they never trailed. They never relinquished. Right. They were never tied. They were never trailed. That was a game that they just were controlled.
They didn't play their best, but they didn't play terrible by any means.
No. And here, the crazy thing is, and one we're going to, you know, we've talked a little more about kind of where the status of the Cardinals is right now. The rich just got richer offensively. Imagine that. The Cardinals, and that's where we're going to lead. We're going to talk about the trade for Zach Ertz. So these riches that they have on offense has just gotten better. And we're going to talk about this. Let's talk about the Zach Ertz trade. We're going to talk about the win over the Browns. We're going to talk about the COVID outbreak on the team and what in the world is going on with COVID with this team. Even there were no vaccinations. And then lastly, we will look at a game that, you know, call it a trap. We might call it a trap game. I don't think it's a trap game. We're going to look at their abysmal opponent that they have coming up this week at home, the Houston Texans. So let's, first of all, I don't know about you. I saw the DeAndre Hopkins trade coming. I got tipped off a little about that. The J.J. Watt signing, I was prepared for. The Zach Ertz trade, I was like, wait, what? I did not think that they would go that route. How surprised were you at the Ertz deal?
Yeah, this was the most, you know, out of left field that we saw. And the reason why is because, you know, everything we had heard is that they were all in for this year, but it was going to be tough to get a guy like Ertz because it was tough from the Philadelphia side. They kind of just wanted too much. And that's
and
not
then
to say
they
exactly
didn't get anything for him.
Right.
They got a Tay Gowan. Now, granted, there are some Cardinals fans that are massive fans of this kid.
And you and I were excited about his potential.
Yes, but, you know, ultimately, they gave up a sixth-round quarterback that they weren't going to have active this year and a fifth-round pick next year. Now, Gowan could turn out to be great, but the fact of the matter is, he wasn't going to be active this year, and the emergence of Marco Wilson makes it so that, you know, with both Wilson and Murphy playing well, Gowan was going to struggle to find a place to play. And in addition, you know what you can find every year in the sixth and seventh rounds? Guys with the athletic traits with the question marks that Gowan has. Honestly, you can find that in almost every single draft. And so, when in terms of what they gave up to get Ertz, and like, what was the wait? Why was this trade not done earlier? Why did Philly suddenly decide that this was enough? I don't get it. I think the deal is easy. Like, you give away a guy you picked up on day three and a day three pick next year. That's such a no-brainer if you can make the financials work.
Right, and it was all about the financials at the end of the day. I mean, they had to figure it out, get it together, make it work, and they did a great job with it because they're hoping now that they can, you know, kind of get Zach Ertz for the remainder of his career here in a – I don't want to say cheap because that makes it sound like they're trying to be cheap, but in a way that it's not a huge, you know – it's not a huge financial barrier to them, and that it'll be a guy that they can have, you know, probably like a 2-year, $10 million type deal where they have a guy that's a tight end, a true tight end one. And then, you know, you can bring back a Max Williams off a knee injury and not worry about it. I mean, if you have Williams and then Ertz, like your tight end room, honestly, it's older, but it becomes a strength.
Absolutely. And I the truth of the matter is that there's some financials that the Cardinals have to do or have had to do to make this deal work, because Ertz comes in due just under $5.7 million the rest of the year. And the NFLPA site had them just shy of $3 million in cap space. Now, the truth of the matter is that this is not a difficult thing to do because he has two void years that don't affect the Cardinals' cap space right now, like with Rodney Hudson. And so a simple thing would be to simply, okay, shove him some money up front with the $5.6 million left. So say you give him four, or even $5 million up front, and then that cuts down the cap hit for the remainder of the year significantly, and then you've got two extra years after. Well, actually, this year it would forward to next year unless they restructure his deal and uses those 2 years on an extension, which, you know, you have to think that was already kind of on the table. And from what the reports were, they didn't say, they haven't talked about, they want to make him a featured piece of the offense. Now, I've got a question for you. Does Ertz become automatically the most talented tight end the Cardinals have ever had since they came to Arizona?
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, you know, I thought when Max was healthy, he was obviously a phenomenal player for this team. I know he was never going to be an all-pro. I know he was never going to be a Pro Bowler. But, I mean, what they asked him to do and what he did was, you know, beyond the pale. And it was so, he did it at such a high level. That being said, I mean, Zach Ertz is a Pro Bowler, three-time Pro Bowler. He is a guy that, has played and won a Super Bowl, been, you know, set the NFL record with his receptions for a tight end, you know, all of that. And at the end of the day, that's not something that the Cardinals have ever had. So I would say right now, yes. I mean, obviously he's got to play at a high enough level.
Right.
But just from a pure talent standpoint, yeah.
Honestly, because here's the thing. I think, no, Jay Novacek, when he left the Cardinals back in the late 80s, like after like 1989, he became arguably the best tight, one of, like, probably the best tight end in the NFC at that time. But the Cardinals didn't unlock that talent. And part of it, you know, he's playing in an offense that had Smith and Troy Aikman and Michael Irvin. Right.
Yeah, when he was at best the fourth option.
Right. And then if we talk about the tight ends that they brought in, the most, I don't think, perhaps talented tight end the Cardinals have brought in, or the most productive pass-catching tight end that the Cardinals have had, was Freddie Jones when they brought him in 2002, and that was 2 years removed from 71 catches. Now, granted, that was a different NFL at that time, but Ertz comes in with the best resume of any tight end that the Cardinals have literally ever had, ever. So, Freddie Jones had 170 catch year. Zach Ertz has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 years of at least 74 catches. He has 116 catch year. He has an 88. And then his second year in the league, when he was, you know, he only started, quote unquote, 5 games, he had 58 catches. He is in his career averaging a ton. And you could also argue, okay, Jermaine Gresham came in. Honestly, if you look at Jermaine Gresham when he was brought in, he was probably, up until that point, probably the most talented tight end that the Cardinals have ever brought in. And Zach Ertz exceeds that by far. He's a 3-time Pro Bowler. He really, like, honestly, he fits the profile of what they're doing. So he's not a Pro Bowler. He wasn't like a Pro Bowler right now. So Roddy Hudson, J.J. Watt, those are all guys that they brought in that were previously multi-year Pro Bowlers who are on the other half. So they are no longer the best at their position. Well, Hudson, you might argue, still is. But they're still up there in talent. And I, honestly, I'm even boggles my mind. How is he going to, like, how good can this offense be adding him to the lineup? Because I will say, Max Williams is a very good tight end. And, you know, he's probably a better blocker. And he is a better blocker overall. He does a better job of the dirty work than Ertz does. That doesn't mean Ertz is bad at it. But Ertz is a better tight end than Max Williams, and they were getting Max Williams, when he went down with that injury, was actually pacing for more production than Ertz this year. So, which makes me wonder, what is this offense going to look like when you have a legitimate, not a Dan Arnold type potential pass catching tight end, but when you have the trio of receivers that they have, plus the explosiveness of Rondale Moore, and now add Zach Ertz to that mix. Is there any way for any team to defend their passing game?
No. I mean, it's tough to say yes, but it's also tough to say that it's unstoppable, because we've seen, you know, unstoppable offenses can be controlled on defense with great pass rush. And that's really what it'll boil down to, is if other teams can rush the quarterback with 4 and drop 7 into coverage, that makes it really difficult. The question is what teams in the NFL can do that. I mean, we know Tampa Bay did it last year very well against Kansas City, but they're a little different this year. They're banged up. They're just not quite
well and
healthy.
Part of the reason they're able to get home better on this, because their secondary was so good last year. Now it was a perfect marriage of a pass rush and secondary. Now they do have the great interior presence of Vita Vea. They do have some great edge rushers on the outside, but we've also seen some great edge rushers. Let's take the Cleveland game just for example. Myles Garrett, yes, he wasn't 100%.
Best. And Jadeveon Clowney's playing at the highest level of his career.
And DJ Humphreys handled Myles Garrett quite well. And that's, you know, Clowney always gives the Cardinals a little trouble, but he's also not a pure pass rusher. Interesting about Clowney, he is a absolute beast as an edge defender without the sack production, because he does a lot of things in the run game, just disrupting things, but for some reason just never is productive in the sack department. But the Cardinals handled that quite well. They handled the 49ers edge rush, which they have a very good group of edge rushers, very good. They had a couple of hiccups there against the 49ers, but they have held up against some of the very good defenses that they could face this year in terms of up front.
Well, and that's what it comes down to. You can only play the teams that are in front of you, and the fact that they're playing at such a high level, that's all you can ask for. If they were playing the Houston Texans and the Miami Dolphins and the New York Jets, that's a little different, right?
If they were winning,
they're
2012, for example, in 2012, when they won their first four games of the year, it seemed like a little like smoke and mirrors. They were winning tough games, but it didn't feel. But the Cardinals are blowing the doors off of teams right now. No one is stopping them, honestly, offensively, and then defensively, they're being great, especially in metrics that matter: points allowed, third down, fourth down, and creating turnovers. Aside from rushing yards allowed, and I'll tell you this, if you allow a lot of rushing yards, it does. If you don't stop them, if you have a bad yards per carry, it doesn't really matter when you're up by 10 to 17 points, because you know what teams stop doing? They stop running the ball.
Yeah, and that's something that people don't understand, is that, I'm not going to say that they're doing it on purpose. I'm not going to say that but they're inviting teams to try and run the football consistently. And their teams are struggling to do it. And, it's a balance. I'll say that. I'm not sure that it's always the safest thing to do to really invite that in. But at the same time, when you look at the success that they're having, on third down, on fourth down, when you look at their, the defense, the scoring defense, like all of that makes a huge difference. And when you look at the fact that they get consistent pressure on the quarterback, they force a lot of turnovers. Those are all things that matter. Turnovers and scoring defense are really the two most important things. Yes. Yards are important. Don't get us wrong. When you give enough teams enough chances in the red zone, they're going to make you pay at some point. Yeah,
third down, red zone, turnovers. That's really the three most important metrics that a defense can have.
And I've said this all along. I think eventually teams are going to start kicking the field goals that they're passing up right now. But for the most part, the Cardinals, again, cannot control what other teams are doing. And the fact that they're getting the stops on fourth down is, that's all you can ask of them. If those teams take the field goals and, get three extra points in games, does it change the outcome? Probably not. But at the same time, that's what those teams are choosing to do. And the Cardinals can, again, only deal with what other teams do or what other teams have or what's in front of them. And when they choose to pass on points, the Cardinals are taking advantage of it.
Coming up next on the Rise of Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web, let's talk a little bit about this weird stuff. And I'm not a fan. I'm not a fan of writing about non-football stuff on my football site. And COVID is one of those things, and yet we're having to talk about it. So let's talk about what happened last week with COVID in the team. What do we have to think about that moving forward? That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. COVID, you know, this is a team that's fully vaccinated. I don't understand what's going on with this team with COVID. They had one of the highest, I think they've had the most COVID cases this year. Now, granted, they were one of the lowest had the lowest vaccination rates entering training camp, but then they got to 100%. And it just is pop. There's one pops here, one pops there. And then this week was the big one. Chandler Jones goes down early in the week. Then we hear about two staffers. We didn't hear those names. Then on Friday, Zach Allen. Then it was Cliff Kingsbury. Then it was Steve Keim. And then Sunday morning, it was Corey Peters. And these are players who are fully vaccinated. And now we go back, at least I think for this week, to extreme protocols, masking, distancing, until they can get things under control without any more positive tests before they can go back to the lessened thing. And it's, I don't know about you, it feels very frustrating to me that it, you know, that when they've done what they're supposed to do, they've gotten themselves vaccinated, that they're missing games, which is, it's really frustrating as a fan because, you know, last year when there were no vaccinations and they're having the strict protocols, you know, the Cardinals were not nearly affected. You know, Fitz got it. Byron Murphy got it. And then it was a couple of Devon Kennard, Christian Kirk at the end of the year. But it didn't seem to be such a deal. And it, for me, it's just frustrating as heck because it felt like we had gotten past this point. And yet now when everyone's done the things that they're supposed to do, it's hitting them and it put them in a really, really bad situation. The fact that, Chandler Jones, one thing, we knew that early in the week, but to lose two defensive linemen the last 2 days, lose your head coach after all the game planning had been. So all the gaming planning had already been done, and then they lose Kingsbury. I don't know. I don't know if there's a solution to that or I just want to rant about this, but what in the world? It seems like everything that's going right for the Cardinals, and it's like then we throw this into the mix, and the Cardinals managed to still even beat COVID in that sense because they won a game when they had everything going against them.
Yeah, and I think that is big for them. You know, it's frustrating, and obviously you don't want it to happen as the season goes along and you get closer and closer to the playoffs. But at the same time, I think it was big in the sense of the confidence it built for this team. You know, you look at, like you said, not having your best pass rusher and you end up with, I think they had five sacks in the game. Yeah. Two for Marcus, two for Jordan. And then Jordan Hicks, I guess I need to specify since Jordan Phillips is finally back. And then JJ Watt got his first one as a Cardinal, despite having his worst game, according to PFF, as a Cardinal,
which is so dumb. Whatever. My gosh.
And then you've got the fact that the offense, they had some issues, especially early, the timing, things of that nature in terms of getting plays in, getting personnel groupings in. But we've seen that too with Cliff. I mean, it happens. It is what it is. I just think that this team is different. And it's different in the sense that it is, you know, a group of guys that kind of know that they're really close to the end. You know, you've got JJ, you've got AJ Green, you've got a guy like Robert Alford that's basically playing with house money at this point, right? You've got Corey Peters. I mean, you've got Rodney Hudson. All of these guys that know that this may be it. And so they are able to focus in and keep the guys engaged and focus consistently. And I just think that that's a big difference from everything else that we've seen with this team and with other teams before, is that there's this, it's similar in terms to what we saw in 2015 with that team with Palmer and those guys. And you know, they ran out at the end, and I think that's the kind of goal right now, is that to have that same mentality, to have that same, you know, quote unquote, all or nothing.
And you know what?
Feel to it.
What I like about this team that's different than that team is because even the coaching staff is veteran, because they had a first year defensive coordinator, James Betcher. And if you remember watching that all or nothing, where they showed the Carolina game in the playoffs, you know what it looked like? A defensive, he had no idea what to do. Vance Joseph has been around the block a few times. And I think, you know, there is this air about this team that's so exciting. And I we talked about it before the year, in that, you know, we thought that this team had the potential, and I saw every team in the NFC West had a Super Bowl ceiling. But even with not everything going right, they're showing it, and it's something to behold. And even with these stupid positive tests coming up, and
it just feels like this is a group that's not going to let little things get in the way.
Absolutely.
And so, I mean, obviously, you know, God forbid an injury comes along, that's a different thing. But they're taking, I mean, this 1-0 mantra is really actually something to behold for this group, and the way that they're so focused on every game. And, you know, obviously we've watched a ton of football, you and I don't remember that many teams that have this kind of feel to it in terms of just the way that they're approaching the season.
And I'll say this. I think it's really a credit to Cliff Kingsbury, the fact that everyone is buying into this. No one gives Cliff enough credit, because part of that is because there are so many questions about him, you know, the non-disciplined team, this college offense, this pretty boy offense, and the league figured him out late last year. I think it really shows this team and the quality of Cliff Kingsbury as a coach, and the fact of this culture that he helped build. You know, you might argue that says a lot has to do with Steve Keim because of how it's been doing, how this was constructed, because these are Keim's players that Kingsbury is coaching. But he has really, there's no doubt to this. The players love playing for Cliff. They love playing for Cliff and Vance. They believe in that duo. And it's time to give him a little bit of credit, you know. He's proving to be a quality NFL head coach.
Well, I think a couple of things that he's done that he doesn't get enough credit for is, one, he's really delegated well. You know, he's a guy that listens, and he's a guy that adjusts. And I don't think he got enough credit for that. You know, one of the things that people tend to forget about college football is that so much of it comes down to recruiting and just the talent that you have on your side. And let's be honest, Texas Tech they never got talent. And I mean, that's not to take shots at Baker Mayfield or
they would get talented players, but their depth was, I mean, they would get a couple of great players and then the rest were talented players. But right. They couldn't compete in the NFL. And this is what I like about Cliff. I love what Cliff said. He defers. He's like, you know, this league's not about coaching. It's about players. And the players believe that. He believes in talented players. And I've said this before. I believe this, that when it comes to the difference that coaches make, I think there is a very, very small number of coaches that are difference makers in how a team, and ultimately it comes down to situation and personnel that you have, what makes a coach great. And And other than that, the, everyone else is because like, I don't think that there is an incapable coach in the NFL. None of the HUD coaches, like even Steve Wilks, and like it things got out of hand there. He's clearly not a bad coach. He wouldn't have been in the NFL as long as he had been if it weren't for being able to coach. Now, that was, that said, my goodness. I'm loving what this team is doing. COVID or not, it's beating down everyone. COVID's getting in their way. They're sidestepping it. They're going over it. And I think that's a lot. They have great depth, and they've actually had some fortune that things happen. The fact that Jordan Phillips was coming back the week that they had two positive tests in the defensive line room. And that's going to be big. If he stays healthy, that's a big boost to that interior defensive line.
Yeah, and there's no pun intended on that. It's just it is a big boost to the line, and it gives them.
And he was disruptive too.
Right. I don't think people understand the importance of him as an interior pass rusher, not as a run stopper, but what he brings as a pass rusher, because now all of a sudden, who do you double team? I mean, so you either do one of two things. You either have to take guys out of the routes,
which teams have been doing.
Right. Especially with Chandler Jones. Or you have to get the ball out quickly, which teams have been doing as well. And so, but as the game goes on and you get into third and seven plus, you know, those situations, you end up having to figure out how to get through against guys like, you know, against all these guys. And that's the big thing. So when you look at it, I think that the Phillips coming back is just going to strengthen this entire team and make them even more dominant against the pass. Now, I'm not going to say this is going to improve the run defense. I want people to understand that. Jordan Phillips, while he is a massive, massive body, he has never been a great run defender. And I'm not expecting him to come in and do just that, for the Cardinals. What I am expecting him to do is continue to create interior pressure and give the Cardinals a guy that allows them to really push the envelope against, you know, defenses or against offenses. Excuse me.
Let's move on and actually get. We've managed to start on our topics and steer clear of them, but let's move on and talk specifically about the game. Coming up next on the Rise of Sea Red podcast, the best of our Cardinals talk on the web. We'll come back and talk about our reactions, good and bad, anything that we can take away from that win over the Browns. That's coming up next on Rise of Sea Red. We're back on the Rise of Sea Red podcast, the best of our Cardinals talk on the web. The Cardinals pick up a 37-14 beatdown of the Cleveland Browns. The Cardinals were fortunate that, well, one, they were banged up. The Browns were banged up. They didn't have Nick Chubb. They didn't have either of their starting tackles. But the Cardinals also didn't have Chandler Jones. They didn't have Zach Allen. They didn't have Corey Peters. And they lost Rashard Lawrence early in that game. And so take that, all that into consideration. And then you have what should be a, you know, and here's the thing, that Cleveland defense, believe it or not, even after what the Cardinals did, is ranked number two in yards allowed this season. And they were the number one rushing attack. They were number two and still are number two overall defense. And the Cardinals just shredded them. And just picked them apart, went the ball down the field. They were strong against the run early. They ended up nearly doubling the rushing output of the Browns. And yes, there were injuries. Odell Beckham got banged up in that game, and Jarvis Landry wasn't back. And then Kareem Hunt got injured late in the game. But by then, it didn't matter, and that was even so. Honestly, it came down to defensively. There was one drive and one play and then the rest of the game they were dominant.
Yeah, they were. And that's what, you know, that was what was so impressive to me. And I had a comment after the game that, you know, I just do our brief game recap that, you know, we all do, and wrote down, or, you know, wrote down what happened. Just mentioned the Cardinals completely shut down the number one rushing attack in the NFL. And somebody was like, well, you didn't mention that they were without their two starting tackles and their starting running back. And I was like, well, that was the one, something that we talked about all week, that these were things to watch. And in article, two articles on game day, we mentioned that, right? Like those guys were out. So that was known coming into it. And two, what you're supposed to do if you're a good team, when you have an opportunity to shut down or play against a team that is missing their best players, is beat them. And in the past, the Cardinals have not done that.
They'll let teams hang around. They'll dink around, and they'll let Kyle Allen throw four touchdown passes against them, or they'll let Landry Jones come in, and after Michael Vick gets hurt, and then Landry Jones comes in and picks them apart for a couple of touchdowns, and then they're left, wait, what? And then they lose.
Think about that San Francisco game. I mean, they're facing a rookie quarterback in his first start.
CJ Beathard and then John Wolford.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I'm saying. Like, I get that the Browns were missing people. It's really hard to beat a team that bad in the NFL. I mean, it is really hard to beat a team. And that's, they're making it look easy.
And they're doing it against good teams. That is, they've done that to three playoff teams from a year ago.
Yeah, and so when you look at it from that perspective, like, you know, I don't care very much what guys are out on the other team. When you, as when that team loses by, you know, four scores, it doesn't matter. I mean, it doesn't matter who's missing, because it's really hard to lose by four touchdowns or by four
four scores in the NFL. It's absurd.
And so for a team like the Cardinals, who, it just seems like every week there are people that want to make excuses for their winning. And the reality is, I think they're fourth or sixth in strength of schedule so far this season. I mean, they're playing good football teams. The only bad football team that they played is the Jacksonville Jaguars
and the Houston Texans this week. So
right. Like, that's what I'm saying. In their 6-0 start, the only bad team that they've really played is the Jaguars.
Right. Is it, like, go through the schedule? The Tennessee Titans were a playoff team a year ago. They're expected to be the best team in the division.
And they're a playoff team right now.
Yeah.
I mean, remember, for everything that's been said, the Bills are now behind the Titans in the playoff standings.
Yup. And then Minnesota. Now, they weren't a playoff team last year. They're a team that's expected to battle for a playoff team, so they're not bad. So they're
yeah, and they're a wild card contender in the NFC.
Then you've got the Jags. They're a mess. But then you've got the Rams and the 49ers. The Rams were a playoff team a year ago. The 49ers,
I mean, the Rams, when the Cardinals beat the Rams were literally the Super Bowl favorites going
right
into that game.
And then they beat the 49ers. Now, though, granted, the 49ers are one of those teams that everyone, they were for a little bit, they had the best odds to win they had better odds than the Rams to win the Super Bowl at some point. And they took care of them. Then you've got the Browns. The Browns were, and I believed, should be, coming into this year as in terms of talent, right up there with the Chiefs, Ravens, and Bills, honestly. And they have just, on these good teams, they are dominating. You know, like they're blowing them out. They're controlling them early. They're putting points on the board. They're taking the ball away, and they're not letting them get back in it. It is something to watch.
And it's just something that you don't see very often. I mean, to your point, you just don't see teams beat down other teams like that. like, it just, it's not something that happens. It's not something that we've really, quite frankly, ever seen from the Arizona Cardinals. And so when you look at it from that perspective, it's, you know, it's impressive. You saw a balanced offensive attack. You saw three receivers score four touchdowns. You saw a defense force a ton of turnovers, get sacks, stop third downs and fourth downs. And all of that is how you win football games. You know, you and I were talking about it a bit off the air. The Arizona Cardinals could have three receivers that go for 1,000 yards this season. You know, AJ Green is playing at that high of a level, and Christian Kirk is, when he's producing in big games, when he's having big games, he's producing at that high level. And then Hop is really, really close to being just right on pace for 1,100 yards. And by the way, 17 touchdowns. But when you look at the other side of it, they're so balanced that,
like, they could have three guys with, they, like we said off the air, they could have three guys with 1,000 yards, and they might end up with four guys with 800, and none of them get to 1,000.
Right. And so, and now, like you said earlier, now you throw Zach Ertz into the mix. And you're like,
what? You're like, that's so many riches in terms of offense.
Yeah. And so at the end of the day, the thing that is happening right now is that you're seeing a team that's developing, you know, chemistry. You're seeing a team that's developing a rapport, and a team that really is buying into, as you said, what Cliff Kingsbury, Vance Joseph, Steve Keim are selling. And I think a lot of that comes down to you've got guys in AJ Green and Rodney Hudson on the offense, and then you've got JJ Watt, Corey Peters, Jordan Hicks, and
Buda like Baker now. Buda Baker has become that guy.
Yeah, and even like a Robert Alford, who are saying, guys, this might be the best chance we ever get as a team. Like, we've got to put this all together and really make it worth our while this year. And you're seeing the guys buy in. And one of the things I think more than anything else that gets undersold is the maturation and development of Kyler Murray, the leader. You and I aren't going to get into anything specific, but I'll tell you this. And Jess knows, you know, this as well. Kyler finally feels like this is his team and that he's the guy, and he's the guy that can, you know, call out players. He's the guy that can, I mean, did you read the story about, you know, before the coaches can even say, hey, let's do it again, that Kyler's telling guys, hey, get back in the huddle, we're doing this again, or get back on the line, we're running this play again. That wasn't good enough. Like, that's where he's at now, and it's just different. And I think that attitude and that mentality, you know, the NFL stands for not for long for a lot of things. And whether or not this is a, you know, 10-year type of relationship like, you know, Aaron Rodgers and Mike McCarthy had or whatever, that's to be seen. But the reality is right now, the way that they're playing and how they're taking care of their business every single week is good enough to play and contend for a Super Bowl. And that's what matters right now.
Absolutely. And Kyler, as we've seen, we saw him. He's a gamer. So he gets up for these big challenges and he makes plays. And it's real fun to watch him play because he is far from a perfect quarterback. Let's be honest. There are still things that he's doing that are not perfect. Like, you watch Tom Brady, he'll have bad games, but it feels like everything he does is perfect. Aaron Rodgers, seems like everything he does is perfect. Like, he doesn't make bad decisions. There'll be sometimes bad things happen, but then Kyler, he's producing at an MVP level, and he's not even at his ceiling yet. That's the crazy thing. he's improving and continuing to improve. And it's wonderful because for him, winning is the norm and is the expectation. And it's really refreshing to see that before an organization that hasn't had that as the norm. He expects it. Now, some of the other players on that were, let's just talk about some of the, just these critical contributors who are not only filling in. Robert Alford, what a great story he's been this year. Now, he did start a little slowly. He's playing some great ball right now. Max Garcia playing really well for Rodney Hudson. And these are guys that we didn't, well, who would have thought that Max Garcia would have been a difference maker this year? I certainly did. Robert Alford, no one counted on. We said it was a good idea to re-sign him because he's been in the system for a long time, and there is a, at a, if you brought him back cheap, there is a potential for being an above-average starter, and he's been that. That's what made this pass defense has just been so good because they're getting clean play from the secondary. It's from the secondary. Aside from the Byron Murphy busted coverage against the Minnesota Vikings for that flea flicker touchdown, you know what they haven't had? You don't see busts in coverage at all.
No, you don't. And what you see is you see a team that, again, to your point, is playing at a level that allows them to, you know, really compete. And part of that is these guys that we didn't expect much from. And that's not a shot. That's just reality. I mean, you don't, to your point, you didn't expect Robert Alford to be a contender for, you know, comeback player of the year. Now, he's not going to win because Dak Prescott's playing out of his freaking mind. But he's going to be one of the guys that's considered for the award. You didn't expect to have, you know, a guy like Jordan Hicks come out and play at a high level with all the drama that was going on during the offseason. It was like, oh, geez, can we just get to football? I got it. Like, it sucked for him, and he was unhappy. And it does suck, man. Like, the idea that you're not good enough is hard for anybody. But think about athletes and the fact that this is all they have, right? Like, and now you're being told you're not good enough. Then you're given the opportunity to go get a trade, and everybody's just basically like,
nobody wants you.
Right. And so, like, this dude is playing like he's got a chip on his shoulder. You know, we've talked about Christian Kirk a lot on this podcast, and just how the fact that he's just never taken the step to be that true number two. And that's, again, that's not a shot at Kirk. It's just the reality that he never took that step. But what you're seeing this year is, one, he's in the slot, right? And that's probably where he should have been all along. And two, when he's the third guy, when he's, and I know this sounds stupid to say, but like, he is so much better than third cornerbacks that it just makes so much sense that he's having this kind of career year and a contract year because he's the third guy. Like, they don't need him to be the one. They don't need him to be the heir apparent to Larry Fitzgerald. They just need him in certain times to make plays in one-on-one situations, and he's doing it with ease. And so, like, to your point, when you're talking about all of these guys, it's just so different than what we've seen in the past. But also, to your point, the reality is, when you are a team that wins a Super Bowl or that competes for a Super Bowl, you have, you know, I'll go to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, you know, roster last year. You have the Scotty Millers, right? Like, you've got the Shaq Barretts. You've got all of those guys that don't get all the pub, you know, the Ronald Joneses and things of that nature. You know, you think about all of those guys, and those are the teams that end up playing, you know, at a high level, the Cameron Brates and those guys. And then when your superstars play like superstars, that's expected, right? Like, you, nobody's shocked that that Byron or that Buda Baker's an all pro, but you're shocked that you're getting not just competent play, but high level play from Robert Alford, that that JJ Watt's still one of the best defensive linemen in the NFL. I mean, holy cow, the last three games, this guy looks like it's 2014 again. And all of that is what is needed when you talk about a championship quality team. And that's what you're seeing for the Arizona Cardinals. And it's just, it's different, man. It's not something we've seen before. And like, at least since 2015, when you look at the 2016 season, you had great players playing great, and then guys that needed to step up not stepping up, right? Like your kicker and you know, these other positions. And now you're just getting, I mean, you're just getting great play from guys that are just contributors. And that is the difference in between, you know, being a team that's competing for a championship and a team that's just trying to make the playoffs.
Coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, of us, our Cardinals talk on the web. Let's wrap this up talking about their game this week against the Houston Texans. Our preview, our predictions. That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. Back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best star of Cardinals talk on the web. The Cardinals face the Houston Texans this weekend. They are 1-5 and look absolutely terrible. And they're getting rid of all their good players. They still have Tyrod Taylor sitting on IR. It sounds day to day. We will know. By the time that you listen to this show, we might know if the plan is if he has been designated for return. So as of right now, Tuesday night, it looks like Davis Mills is going to start for the Texans against the Cardinals. They are averaging 15 points a game. Second worst offense in the league in that sense. They're giving up nearly 29 points a game. And if you look at that offensively, they're almost all their production this season has come in one game when they beat the Jacksonville Jaguars 37-21. And that happened with Tyrod Taylor, quarterback, who is a competent, above-average quarterback in the NFL. They put up 21 against the Browns, lost by 10. They put up 22 against the Patriots. But in three of their games, they scored 9, 0, and 3. And 3 was last week. And so this is a team that struggles offensively, that struggles defensively. They've allowed 25 points or more in 4 of their 6 games. They've allowed 30 or more in 3 of their games. They have allowed 40 to the Bills. They turned the ball over a lot. They have 9 turnovers in their last 3 games. And they've taken the ball away 8 times this year, but 3 of those came against the bad Jaguars. They don't do anything well. It doesn't seem. Not anything.
No, and it's one of those games where everybody wants to go, oh, it's a trap game. They've got to come out and really focus. And I agree, they do need to come out and really
focus. But I'm not worried about it.
Focus, but they need to come out and just completely shut down any idea that this is a trap game. In fact, what they need to do is they just need to come out and really just break the will of the Texans in the same way they did to the Browns and the Titans, and really just create this whole idea that this is a great team, and that, you know, they're not going to take weeks off. And again, I think one of the big things for this team is the fact that they've got they've got so many veterans that kind of understand. And this is, I mean, you hit on it. This is a big game for DeAndre Hopkins and J.J. Watt.
It's their old team. And honestly, Hopkins, he's not, it's not like J.J. who, you know, he didn't have a problem with the organization. He just wanted to move on. They weren't going to pay him. They weren't going to extend his contract. DeAndre, they disrespected him in a way. You know, Bill O'Brien said, oh, he's not practicing enough. We want different guys. We want guys that work hard. And then they traded him for a second-round pick. He really felt that in his core. So he's a guy. Hopkins, more than anything else, despite he wants to win, but he also wants to show that other team what they're missing out on. This is not a game that will be a, it's, some will call it a trap game. There's no way this is a trap game because they're going to play this game for JJ and for DeAndre.
Yeah, and it's one of those games where you're going to see this team, I really do think, come out quickly and just kind of put the boots to the Texans and not really give them any hope. And that's, to me, that's a sign of a very good team. A team that comes out and doesn't waste any time, waste any movement, and just really comes out and you know, is able to dominate from start to finish on both sides of the ball. I think, to your point, this offense is really bad. I mean, this is like Ryan Lindley. It's a little better than Ryan Lindley. I'll say like Kevin Cobb, like offense. The running game, bad. I mean,
David Johnson. Oh my gosh, that trade. David Johnson, he's got 20 carries for 79 yards this year.
Yeah, it's almost like they don't even use him, and they just traded an all-pro wide receiver to get a running back, and then they're like, you know what, we're okay. I mean, they went out and signed Mark Ingram, so clearly it's not.
Well, they went out and signed all the running backs: Mark Ingram, Philip Lindsay, Rex Burkhead. Like, what are you doing? They do have a couple, like Brandon Cooks, very good. Jonathan Greenard, they have a young pass rusher that's looking promising, but then they cut Whitney Mercilus, who is probably their best pass rusher. Yeah, and so things are. Yeah. They don't make any sense right now.
No, they don't. And so, you know, this is a game you expect. I'm not expecting 400 yards and 5 touchdowns from Kyler Murray, you know, and 300 or another 200 yards rushing. But what you do expect in this game, I think you expect them to get out to a lead and kind of not necessarily take their foot off the gas. But
it'll be the James Conner grind it out second half.
Right. I think James Conner's probably going to set his Arizona Cardinal record for rushing attempts. And, yeah, I think this is going to be a game where you're going to see kind of who the Cardinals are in terms of really figuring out their ability to stay focused, stay engaged, and then set the tone that this is, hey, we're a great team, and we're not going to take any team lightly. Instead, we're going to, you know, really embrace this 1-0 mantra every week and continue to dominate and bad teams, and then play well against good teams.
And I expect this game to be a blowout. I think they will jump out early. I think they'll force turnovers. I think they're going to feast on Davis Mills. No, because here's another. They don't have Laremy Tunsil in the lineup, so it'd be fantastic if we get Chandler Jones back into the lineup. Face a backup tackle.
I mean, I know you shouldn't feel bad, but like, we've been Cardinals fans for so long. Doesn't it feel kind of guilty to be on the other side of this thing now?
Nope. Not at all. Considering some of the, just, I mean, in just in recent history, because, you know, we experienced 2018. That was so bad. What the Texans are basically right now, the 2018 Cardinals, and the Cardinals managed to win 3 games. They beat the 49ers twice. Didn't make any sense at all. But, you know, I think this game is going to be over quickly. And even if they get, you know, get a whiff of a little bit of success offensively, I think the Cardinals, and they have a 17.5 point spread. That's unheard of for the Cardinals. I think they covered. I don't think it's going to be in a question. This is going to be a 3-touchdown win. They're going to win 37-13.
Yeah, I hope you're right. I'm going to go a little less. I'm going to say 31 to 14. You know, I think the Texans get them on the hook. And so I'm going to go 31-14. I think the Cardinals get out to a big, you know, 24-0 lead going into the fourth quarter. Or not in the fourth quarter, but they get out to a 24-0 lead and then end up, you know, giving up a couple cheap ones in the third and fourth quarter.
I expect big game from Kyler Murray, though I don't think the way they have to do it, it might end up being on the ground. And here's the thing, like this is probably one of those games where they dominate, kind of like with the Browns, but they don't hit that 400 yard mark, because when you take over with the field position that they did and they're forcing turnovers, you don't have a long field to go down to gain yards. So they put up 37 points without getting 400 yards, which is pretty impressive. But yeah, this is like, kind of look at the yard totals that the Texans are getting off. They gave up 395 to the Jags, 355 to the Browns, 407 to the Panthers, 450 to the Bills, 352 to the Patriots, and 388 to the Colts. So they've only allowed over 400 yards twice, but they've been in the upper 350s. They've been above 350 every single week. And their offensive output, actually, you know, they put up 449 in week one. They put up over 300 three times, but then there's two. They were under 200 in that Bills game. 109 total yards and 5 turnovers. That's the type of game I want to see, honestly. That, you know, if the Cardinals are that good, which we think, what they've proven to be this year, they are going to put a beat down on this team, and we might get an entire quarter of Colt McCoy. And that'll be beautiful.
And even if the game, I mean, to your point, even if the game's 37-14, even if it's the same type of score and all of that from the Cleveland Browns game, that's a great performance.
Yep.
And I think everybody would be okay with that.
Absolutely. And with that, we'll go ahead and wrap up this show. You know, we've got a short week next week, so we will still have a show. Hope we'll be talking about those 7-0 Cardinals, previewing that Green Bay game. So the show will drop on Wednesday during the day, and then the Cardinals play on Thursday with the long bye. But we'll be at mid-season as well, so we'll get the mini bye next week, and that's that. So that's on behalf of the Rise of Sea Red podcast. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. Thanks for listening. We'll be back again next week. Go Cardinals. Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms, so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, rise up, Sea Red. Whoa!